You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
And we're to the home stretch here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. This is indeed Holder Tonight, heard Monday through Friday until 3. And just a few moments ago, we were talking with Mark Bell, the editor from FilmThread.com, about the Frigid 50 list that they put out. And on the list is actually Borat. Very high, too. Is at number 3. And it's interesting that it's on the list because, you know, Borat does a great job of holding up a mirror for Americans to see themselves, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And, of course, whenever you use that mirror, either individually or collectively, we don't always like everything we see. Anyway, on the line with us right now is B.J. Gallagher, who's a sociologist and author of the diversity classic A Peacock in the Land of Penguins. And we're here to talk a little bit about the film and the effect it's having. Hi, B.J., how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, sure. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I have, unfortunately, haven't had the chance to go and see this film yet. I want to see it this weekend.
Oh, you got to see it.
I'm looking forward to it, but people are getting all upset by it. And, I mean, you can see this coming a mile away.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't take a crystal ball to see what was going to happen if this film found an audience. It would bring people out of the woodwork and start people suing. I take it you're not surprised either?
No, I'm not. But what's interesting is what they say it's about isn't really what it's about. What it's really about is money. Because if the film hadn't done well, they wouldn't have been embarrassed at all and nobody would have filed suit.
Exactly.
But the fact that it's made a whole ton of... What they're upset about is the fact that they made a business deal. But of course, you know, in the film business, it's a crapshoot. Nobody knows how much a film is going to make. And it was a runaway hit. And so now they're all upset with him and with themselves for asking for too little money.
Well, my favorite are the frat boys because they're... as I said on the air earlier when they first brought up their lawsuit, they said that they didn't think this movie was going to be shown in the United States. And now they're embarrassed that people actually see them for basically who they are. And the thing that got me, as I said on the air at the time... that excuse that the film wasn't going to be shown in the United States, I would have bought that if I was a judge 20 years ago. But with the internet and DVDs and VHS, I'm not buying it anymore.
You're absolutely right. There is nothing that stays within geographic boundaries anymore.
Exactly.
It's all over the world. And, I mean, they could have simply told their, if they were embarrassed, which I don't think they really are, but they just could have told their friends, hey, we were acting. It's a movie. It's an act. Howard Stern does it all the time.
Now, Will, do you think this, it's interesting, because this film coming out shows to a certain degree, and now Kazakhstan's all upset as well, but anyway.
Yes.
And as I said on the earlier, the film isn't about Kazakhstan. They're not the ones who look bad in this movie. Do you think this...
Everybody looks bad.
Yeah. Do you think this film opens up a dialogue about the things that people don't want to talk about in the United States, much in the same way last year the film Crash did?
Yes. Here's my take on it. I think that the whole political correctness movement puts a big damper on discussing real issues.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Oh, man, thank you for saying that. Yes.
Really, you know, the PC police just jump all over you. You can't ask a question. You can't, you know, inquire. You can't express a feeling or a thought or a fear or an anxiety without the PC police labeling you as racist, sexist, ageist, anti-Semitic, whatever. And how are we ever going to get comfortable with differences if we can't talk about them?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's, yes, just as the movie Crash really helped a little bit open up a dialogue. I mean, it's the movie Crash really showed what a lot of people think and feel but don't dare speak. And I think that Borat does the same thing, except there are more people speaking than we like to acknowledge.
Right.
But there was some good stuff in the Borat movie too. I mean, there were some, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good things were, no, you can't have sex with a woman without her permission, and no, it's not, we don't make fun of our retarded people. And I mean, there was a lot of progress, and you could see a lot of kindness and compassion and sensitivity. So it wasn't all bad. There was some good stuff there too.
Doesn't it make you wonder what was on the cutting room floor for that film?
Oh my!
aren't you looking forward to the DVD with the extras?
Well, it was interesting. I went to see it last weekend, and I noticed I paid a lot of attention to my own sort of visceral reaction as I was watching it. And there were a couple of times when I thought, he went over the top. It was just gratuitous grossness, just for the sake of potty humor. And I just thought, oh, you didn't need to do that. That just wasn't, you know, you could have been brilliantly funny without going that far. And actually, several people got up and walked out of the theater.
Now, I'm just wondering, do you think people are upset because he has peeled back the American fabric like an onion? or the fact that he's not an American who's peeling back the American fabric like an onion?
Well, that's a good question. You know, would we have been upset if it was Robin Williams making that movie instead of Cohen?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm not sure that that we can see ourselves. I mean, I like what Robert Burns, the Scottish poet, said many, many years ago. You know, what a gift it is to see us as others see us, to see ourselves as others see us. And I think that's what Cohen has done with this movie, has given us an opportunity to look in the mirror and say, here's how other people see you. And the fact that we don't like what they see tells us that maybe we need to clean up our act a little bit more.
And people want to shoot the messenger, basically.
Of course they want to shoot the messenger.
Now, did you, when you were talking about your own reaction when you were watching this film,
yes,
did you, as a sociologist, watch the people around you in the theater while you were watching this film as well?
Well, it was dark, so I couldn't watch them very well, but I could...
But you can see people squirm, can't you?
You could feel them squirming.
Yeah.
You can feel the energy. And you can hear the quality of the laughter changes. Some of the laughter is sort of nervous laughter, like, oh, I can't believe he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And others was just hysterical laughter, like, he nailed it. He nailed that one. And so there was all different kinds of laughter, which tells you what people are feeling. And then there was some groaning, like, oh, God, that's so gross. You know?
And isn't there really a third kind of laughter? And that's the laughter of, I really shouldn't be laughing at this, but I am.
That's right. Oh, goodness. Well, the potty humor, I think, was what really sort of put it over the top. For me, it was sort of like, oh, yuck, that's so gross. But then, you know, I have to remember that one of the top-selling children's books in America the last few years has been a book called Walter the Farting Dog.
Yes, we've had that author on the program, too. And
and the plush toy that goes with that book is the number one selling plush toy in the States today. And that tells us that potty humor sells, and not just with little boys. It sells with people, with adults, too.
Absolutely. We are talking here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800, with BJ Gallagher. She's a sociologist and author. The book, by the way, is A Peacock in the Land of Penguins. And I want to ask you about the book in a moment. We'll take a quick break. This is Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
And we are talking with BJ Gallagher, a sociologist and author of A Peacock in the Land of Penguins, here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. And BJ, you mentioned earlier that we're being strangled by the PC police.
Absolutely.
Basically.
Absolutely. Especially here in California.
And Just who are the PC police in your estimation? Because I have a theory, but let's hear yours.
Well, I'm not sure. I have a friend who has a theory, and her theory is that the whole political correctness movement, most people credit it to the liberals, to the, you know, the people on the left. She thinks it's a right-wing conspiracy to keep people, to keep sort of the status quo in terms of the races at each other's throats and the, you know, the different genders at each other's throats. She thinks it's a right-wing thing designed to keep us from making any progress when it comes to diversity.
No, I'm going with the liberals, but I'm talking about a very small group of extreme liberals.
Mm-hmm.
Extreme touchy-feely, huggy liberals.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. I grew up in the 70s. You know, went to a mixed school.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up as a black kid in the 70s, and that was when Roots was on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. After that show was on, the people would come up to me and say, "Oh, Peter, we're so sorry." And it's like, first of all, hello, I'm Canadian. Second, 200 years ago, nothing to do with me. What are you sorry about? Were you there? What's, you know, I think these are the people who grew
it's
up to
white
be
white guilt.
These are the people who grew up to be the PC police.
Yes, yes, I know. I know.
Anyway, tell me about your book, which is Peacock in the Land of Penguins.
The book is actually a true story. I used to work at the Los Angeles Times, and I was the peacock, and they were the penguins. It's as simple as that. This was an organization that I worked there from 1986 to 1991,
mm-hmm.
and this was an organization that needed to change. And I came from outside the newspaper business. I was the training manager for that company. And I could see that they needed to change, but they couldn't see that they needed to change because they were making, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this is a problem for newspapers in Canada as well as the U.S. It's the whole newspaper industry. It's not just the L.A. Times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, I spent 5 years there beating my head against the wall, finally left the organization, and I wrote the book as a mental health exercise to get all the frustration out of my system.
Right.
What's wrong with those people? And then, much to my surprise, it turned into a huge success. It's now published in 19 languages. In fact, we just sold it to a Montreal publisher. They're going to be publishing it in French. I don't speak French, but I believe it's called Sojidés.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to be publishing it up in Canada. And so what I found was, A, there's penguins everywhere, narrow-minded, bureaucratic, stuffy, traditional people who have no vision because they can't fly. They can't fly. They all think alike. They walk alike. They talk alike. They must be penguins.
What a great analogy.
Well, you know, I lived it, and here was I. You know, this sort of flashy Southern California girl with wild curly hair and big earrings. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what am I doing in this place? And I was, you know, noisy and colorful and entrepreneurial. And I produced great results, but I wasn't a penguin. And there were other birds. There was Helen the Hawk and Sarah the Swan and Mike the Mockingbird. And we all had the same problem. We came from other either newspapers or other companies to the L.A. Times, but none of us were penguins. And so I wrote a book about it, and it went on to be an international success because there's a lot of birds out there who feel like they don't fit in the organizations that they work in.
Does it warm the cockles of your heart when you realize that you're not the only peacock out there and that there are probably more of you than there are of them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And at the end of the book, the peacock and the hawk and the swan, they all go off. They leave the land of the penguins because they realize they just can't be successful there. So they go off to the land of opportunity where they can be valued for who they are. You know, and some birds hop, and some of them swim, and some of them fly, and, you know, they're diverse birds. And as for the land of penguins, well, their fate is unfolding every day in newspapers across the country.
So is...
And now, 15 years later, I look at them and I think, I told you guys, but you wouldn't listen.
Do, in your estimation, peacocks eventually turn into penguins? Or, in other words, were penguins always penguins?
Not always. That's a very good question. Not many people are that perceptive. That's a very good question. For instance, Apple Computer. Apple Computer certainly started off as a peacocks organization.
Mm-hmm.
But you get enough peacocks together, and they're successful enough, they can start to walk and talk like penguins. Well, this is the Apple way of doing things. This is the way we do it here. And, you know, there's a certain sort of regimentation that takes over. So even the craziest, wildest birds have to be careful that if they become successful, they can turn into penguins.
Okay. And would you say that Sacha Baron Cohen is a peacock or a penguin?
I think he is the king of all peacocks. He is a peacock among peacocks.
Do you fear that he will one day turn into a penguin?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. No. No, he's a wild and crazy guy. And we need people like that. You know, Peter Drucker, who's sort of the grandfather of all of us management consultants, said that organizations need two kinds of people. And you could say that society does, too. He called them, he said, they need bureaucrats and they need lunatics. The challenge is, how do you get them to live and work together? But he said, you got to have them, because innovation and creativity never come from the bureaucrats. It always comes from the lunatics. And so, you know, I tell my clients, the very people who drive you the craziest, who annoy you the most, are the people you need the most. I call them peacocks and penguins. He called them lunatics and bureaucrats. So I just ask executives, have you hugged your lunatics lately?
Yeah, you want to keep them close.
Yeah, you want to take good care of those lunatics, but they'll drive you nuts.
It's not so much hugging them, it's patting them down. The book is called A Peacock in the Land of Penguins. It's written by B.J. Gallagher. And by the way, you can check out her website, www.peacockproductions.com. That's www.peacockproductions.com. B.J., I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us this evening.
Oh, thank you. I had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
Coming up, we'll touch base with Saul Buxenbaum, find out what's on his show, Last Call with Saul, here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.